back
okay,
live.
Everyone
go ahead,
in BBS land, everyone in BBS land.
Hold on 1 second.
The recording has started.
Go ahead.
This is, what's today's date?
16th.
September 16th.
September 16th.
Yeah. Also in Canada.
2019. Wynn and Terry in Sedona. Are you there, Terry?
I'm here.
And thank you for your patience. We were waiting for BBS to get on. We always have an excuse, but it's always worth the wait, I hope. In any case, we have a very interesting call tonight. And why don't we mute everybody, okay?
All participants are muted, and they can unmute themselves.
And get rid of the dings. And
will do.
You know, we have a rather unusual connection with Jesus and the work of Jesus. And we are not in any way, shape, or form religious or dogmatic, but we have something in common with Jesus from my experience and my questions and answers to our sources, okay? And it keeps manifesting in, it has to do with a connection with the Ra group. And that a few years ago, I became convinced that the Ra group was responsible for the manifestation of Jesus. And there were all kinds of clues. First one was in one of David Wilcock's channelings. This was the first clue when I was first studying Wilcock. We came to you in our religion, mainly Christianity, but we don't speak in those terms much anymore because of the way religion screwed it up. And that really took me when I read it, because we came to you in our religion. What are they saying there? Because this was the first time I ever made a connection between the Ra group and Jesus. And I didn't believe it. You know, I don't take a channeling and walk around that says, Wilcock's channeling said they came to us in Jesus. I always consider, maybe this is some kind of negative source trying to get on a ride here. But I weigh it and evaluate it. And then, of course, there was Terry coming in channeling, who was most definitely all kinds of evidence tying her to this Catholic saint who was channeling, who would go into the local church in Siena, Italy, and they would write down everything she said because they thought God was speaking to them through her. And Terry was the spitting image of St. Catherine. I'm not going to tell the story. We've told it before. But it's very compelling, the connection. And it's almost, you know, cut and dry. There's no doubt in my mind. And then we had Terry Friedman, who I didn't seek him out. We just accidentally met when he was at a expo in Sedona where I was giving a workshop. And he came to my workshop, and he was glowing in the back of the room. And he was in a wheelchair. And I went up to him, and I said, introduced myself. And I said, listen, I'd like to keep in touch with you. And I took his phone number. I would call him. And then we just talk about anything. And then I went to his house. He was in Phoenix, which is about 100 miles from Sedona. And on his table in his dining room was a book called The Man Who Walked with Jesus. And I picked it up, and I felt the energy of it. And I first thought that he had a really good imagination, and that he was writing the story of Jesus through the eyes of Matthew. But I kept feeling the energy, and I looked at him, and I said, "You were Matthew, weren't you?" And he actually looked at the floor, slightly ashamed, and said, "Yes." Now, I still didn't believe him. But I thought he might be. So I had him on my call. And on this call, on a Monday call about 5 or 6 years ago. And I could talk to him, and he would he could recall incidents with Jesus like he was really there. And he was not into our work, but I would ask him questions, and it would correspond to our work. For example, connecting the Ra group to Jesus and having the Ra group assign him the title of Messiah would seem out of context with the Ra group. In other words, it's the law of one. There's no hierarchy. They never tempt people to give up their power. Now, how did Jesus get to be a Messiah? And I asked them, and they said, well, the people of the time were expecting a Messiah. And when Jesus did all his miracles, they anointed him with that title. And but then Terry Friedman said, Jesus told us that when we were walking around ministering to people, don't tell people I'm the Messiah. And that was an interesting thing he said. And then when he knew he was leaving, he told his disciples, don't start a religion around this. Walk two by two through the communities and minister to people, but not in a religious context. And it was only after he was gone that somebody, one of his disciples, I believe, said he got a revelation, and it was on this rock, I mean, it was Peter, on this rock I build my church. He started a religion, started what became Christianity, and the whole idea of Jesus being a Messiah, and go to church and tithe or you won't go to heaven. And then the Bible became edited by the Council of Nicaea. And even though there was a huge amount of truth in it, those things were not necessarily the intent of the higher sources. And churches became institutions that in many cases were creating fear. Do it our way, do it this way, follow God's will, all of that stuff. And it didn't sound, and it doesn't sound, like our sources. Now, if you happen to be religious and it works for you, I'm not going to say, don't do that. Jesus' direct words had wisdom in them that I could understand from my own experience. And I knew they were true. Sometime early in my life, I had studied the Bible, and I said, I'm only going to accept what resonates here, and everything else I'll just put in a folder, and if somehow it proves itself to me, I'll believe it, but otherwise, I'm not going to believe it because it's in the Bible. Well, the very first person I met that had a connection with Jesus was long before any of this work. It was like 30 to 35 years ago. And it was the guy, some of you heard me tell the story of the guy that did this reading for me where he told me I was a troubadour, and I was convinced his reading was correct. And I'm not going to explain that now, but he was my original girlfriend in college, who kind of was the person who, when I met her, I was a physics major and I was a nerd. And she was into all this other stuff, and she opened me up to it all. Edgar Cayce, alternative health, astrology. And she had called me and said, I found this guy that can do readings just like Edgar Cayce. And I got a reading from him. He was in Philadelphia when I was on the East Coast, and he told me I was a troubadour. And after he told me the story, I realized I wrote a song that told the same story he told me in great detail, specifics, which I thought was from my imagination. And I was convinced the story was right. And I was convinced he had this amazing ability that I had never experienced in anyone before. And I only read about it in Edgar Cayce. So now, when I came to Los Angeles, my old girlfriend from Berkeley was now in Los Angeles. She was married, and she would go to all this guy's seminars. And I started going to his seminars. He would give these talks. And when he talked, I experienced something that I had never experienced with any other guru, spiritual teacher that I had ever paid attention to. There would be this energy in the room, and it would run through my body, and it would totally take my pain away. I would come in, and I would be all muscles tight, shoulders tight, and it would just all release. And I remember there were times when he looked in my eyes, and it was like the energy went from my eyes into his eyes, and I was transformed. And I would go home, and I would stay that way for a couple of days. Now, at that time, he used to tell people he was a reincarnation of John the Beloved. And I used to think, well, maybe that's what this Holy Spirit is, that energy I'm feeling. It was unmistakable. And I wasn't the only one that felt it. People became very enamored of this guy. And at the time, there were a number of high-profile Hollywood people who would attend his talks, stars, producers, whatever, Beach Boys. And, you know, the really amazing thing about running into these disciples. Now, I didn't know for sure that he was John the Beloved, but I said, and I wasn't officially a Christian, so I didn't even know who John the Beloved was very much, but I knew for sure I was experiencing this energy when I sat in the room. And so I actually went to his lectures for 10, 12 years. And one of the interesting things about this story here is, in a normal way of thinking, without having all these experiences that I've had, I would have thought that if somebody was a disciple of Jesus, they would have to be a ascended person forever. That was enough to clear your karma. And I found out in every case where I met somebody who I believed to be one of Jesus' disciples, they had their human side, their very human side, sometimes surprisingly human. It's kind of like when Daphne, you know, Daphne is the one that originally said that, look up St. Catherine of Siena with regards to Terry. And Daphne had a background being a Catholic. And she had a lot of trouble with our work because of her negative attacks. She started thinking, maybe this work is negative. Maybe this is demonic. And then out of the blue, she said, Terry was, look up St. Catherine of Siena, which triggered me, my original research on that. And then when I showed her the picture of Terry and St. Catherine, she said, that can't be true. Saints don't come back. Saints go off forever and be with God, you know? And even though I came through her, she did this a couple of times. She said amazing things and then couldn't believe they were true at the time. I don't know. She might believe it now, but at the time, she didn't. And, you know, because there's a temptation to give up your power. In other words, if somebody was very religious and they knew Terry was St. Catherine, they would probably be, you know, when Terry was St. Catherine, if you read about St. Catherine, St. Catherine had this group of women following her around everywhere. And they adored her. And I don't know if Terry liked it, but it was the way it was. But Terry has her obstacles. She didn't finish her karmic path by being St. Catherine. And although in another paradigm of thinking, I would have thought if somebody was a saint, they would have finished their path. And if somebody was a disciple of Jesus, they would finish their path, you know, and they all went off into the heaven realms together. And my first kind of jolt was this fellow who said he was John the Beloved, and about 15 years into doing what he was doing, doing his ministry, he got into deep doo-doo because he had these four young men around him, and he was sleeping with them. They would alternate nights, and each one thought they were the special one. And he said he needed protection, and he probably did need protection. But at some point, the four young men all ended up talking to each other and discovered that he was sleeping with all of them, and they got really mad at him. They felt betrayed. They all thought they were the special one, and there was this huge public thing. People Magazine, because of his connection with all these Hollywood stars, People Magazine did an expose. Geraldo did an expose, and half of his group left. And I don't mention his name because there were so many good things about his work that I don't want to bring this up. It almost destroyed his work. And when I looked at the whole thing, not only was he doing that, but there were these areas of unethicalness in the way he did it and in the way people felt betrayed. And, you know, it was hard for me. Now, could someone who was a disciple of Jesus do something like that? And then when Terry Friedman was on my first conference call, I asked him the question. I had no idea where this was going to go. I said, which disciples were you friends with? And he said, I can't remember what he said. But then I said, well, how about John the Beloved? And he said, oh, John the Beloved was a homosexual, but he never bothered us with it. And I mean, I fell off my chair. I said, I mean, I was convinced that the other guy was John the Beloved. I was convinced at that moment that Terry was Matthew. And, you know, I never said this while Terry was alive, but there were these areas where Terry was compromised. Now, let me say, I don't know if I want to say compromised. They used to tell me he used to have these beautiful women that he paid as an escort, and how they were all expert at sex. And that's the way he was dealing with his sex life. And, you know, at this point now, I'm not going to say anything negative about that. He didn't do anything unethical. They got paid. They did what they did, and he got gratified, and he needed to be gratified. And, you know, sexual urges, as most guys know, you can try to follow some rule about them, but if you deny them, you can go into a great state of out of balance. And I speak for myself as well. So that was, and Terry had other idiosyncrasies that were not perfect and that you wouldn't expect from someone who is a disciple of Jesus. And so I'm leading into our third disciple of Jesus, who I sent the email out today about. And it's like I'm talking about him because he just died. And Terry and I were pretty convinced that he was a disciple. But while he was alive, if I asked our sources, they wouldn't have told me, although he believed he was a disciple of Jesus. And it's like he did not, the one thing that these three people had in common was the ability to bring in what I call the Christ consciousness. And even if they had distortions, they had that ability. And many of you who have participated in some of our previous calls that heard Terry Friedman talk know what I'm talking about. And many of you know what the Christ consciousness is. Some of you can feel it right now. It's not me. It's not charisma. It's an energy that comes in from sixth dimension. And when I asked about it, they said it was a matrix that the Ra group held and anchored with Jesus to allow him to lift people, and what became known as the Holy Spirit or the Holy Ghost, or what I'm calling the Christ consciousness. And at this point, I'm convinced that's true. And as I talk about it, I'm sure it's coming in to the call right now. So let me tell you about Paul Weiland. Well, let me tell you about Doubting Thomas. Terry, are you there? Terry? Hello, Terry. I think she hears me. She's probably frantic.
Yeah, I was muted.
How did I know? Okay, congratulations. that was record time. tell us about Doubting Thomas.
Well, Doubting Thomas was he was named that because he doubted everything. And after Jesus died, he went to India, and he...
Well, let me just say, I sent out a picture today that of Thomas putting his fist in Jesus' wounds to see if they were real. Did you see that picture ever?
Yeah, I think so.
And it vaguely looks like Paul, you know? But that's not a good... I wouldn't close the case on that. But...
Yeah, there were some pictures of Doubting Thomas. He went to India afterwards. And he promoted Christianity.
Christianity.
Yeah.
And then he got stabbed in his back, okay?
He got stabbed by a lance right in his back, in his spine.
Right. And when we met Paul Weiland, he had a big hump on his back from cancer, where he would have been stabbed.
Right.
We noted that. And he didn't just... The way we met, the way you meet people is always interesting. Many of you heard me talk about Terry's Breakfast Club, where she would go to a restaurant, and she endeared herself with these two older ladies that were the biggest characters I ever met. They would walk everywhere. They were in their 80s. Isn't that right? Were they in their 80s, Terry?
One was 88, but she's been 88 for a couple years now. And the other one was 75.
Which one was 75? Which one is 75?
Elizabeth. 75, but she'd be about 77 now.
Right. And they were inseparable. And they were characters beyond belief. And Elizabeth, I don't know how this came out. Terry would sit with Elizabeth and what was the other one's name?
Cleo.
And Cleo was more calm and collected. She was the older one, correct?
Yeah.
And Elizabeth was more outrageous. And Elizabeth was writing books and poems. And
she'd get up about 2 or 3 in the morning every morning and write for a couple hours.
Mm-hmm. And they never had a car. Somehow they had money from one source or another. And Elizabeth would have a booth at something called the Art Mart in Sedona. And she would go there every day with Cleo. And they would rent spaces for various artists. And most of them didn't go there. Most of them just left their wares there, and they had a counter, and they would check out their wares. But Elizabeth would sit there every day, and she would hustle people. Come here, look at my book. Let me do a reading for you. She was psychic. And she told Terry one time that she remembered her past life as a famous dancer by the name of Isadora Duncan, who, if you look her up, you find she started out as a ballet dancer and then became an international sensation because of her erotic dancing. And eventually she was killed when her long scarf got caught in an automobile tire of a convertible and strangled her. And, you know, I looked up Elizabeth, and she looked like Isadora Duncan, right?
Right.
And so Terry was like, when she was finally let out of the hospital and recuperating, she was, we would go to the coffee pot together every day for about a week. And I was getting bored with that. And Elizabeth and Cleo were going there every day. And eventually, Terry gravitated to sit with them, okay? And that was fine with me because they had a genuine connection, okay? They were all weirdos beyond belief. Terry included. And somehow they understood each other. And they were so glad, you know, Terry was radiating love and acceptance to them, and they were appreciating Terry. And so this was going on for a couple of months. And then one day, their friend Paul sat with them, okay? And the four all sat together. Now, Paul was a fairly eccentric guy, and he kept referring to his master in India. He had spent 30 years of this life as a disciple of this Indian master, and the master had died, but he thought the master was on the other side working with them. And he really wasn't connecting with Jesus or Christ consciousness on a how would we say it, an outward expression of acknowledgement. But he did have that kind of love that people would feel around him. He was a very gentle guy. And after a while, Cleo and Elizabeth went to Ireland for the summer, which they do every summer. And Paul and Terry started sitting with each other. And Paul had cancer, and his wife, who was also a disciple of the same Indian guru, had died probably a few months earlier. And Paul started to fall in love with Terry. And he would be buying her breakfast every day. And she would tell him, no, I'm taken. But he would insist on doing that. And then he would get her gifts. And he was somewhat forgetful. And he was very sharp. He had been a periodontist in Cape Cod and made quite a bit of money. And he enjoyed spending money. Okay, now remember, this is an alleged disciple of Jesus, Doubting Thomas, right? And then he would give gifts out. Like, he'd be there at the table, and he'd give Elizabeth an envelope with thousands of dollars in it. And then he'd come back the next day and said, I gave you too much money. You better give it back to me. And then he would give Elizabeth his second car. And then he would say, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm taking it back, right?
Yeah, I might need it.
I might need it, right? And when was the first time he mentioned being Thomas to you? Maybe he didn't mention it. Maybe he just said he was a disciple of Jesus.
Well, he said that, you know, that someone had told him he was a disciple of Jesus, and all of a sudden it's like, boing, it's like the just I got the words in my head, you know. He was doubting Thomas. And so I didn't say anything, but I went and I looked up doubting Thomas, and I saw that he, after Jesus had died, he'd gone to India and had spread Christianity there and had been killed by a Brahmin sword in the back, or lance in the spine in the back. And I knew that Paul had cancer in the back, really bad, with a fracture of the spine. And so I looked up the story, and then I got a video of the story, and I played it for Paul, and he really identified with it, because he was now bonded with the Indian guru, the Maharaj, and he loved India, and he watched it. He watched the video, and that was, seemed really correct to him.
I mean, early on, we gave him a copy of Terry Friedman's book, The Man Who Walked with Jesus. And first
yes.
he said, I'm not interested in that. I've been there and done that, right?
Right. I already did that. What do I want to read it for?
Yeah, then later, he read it. And what did he say?
He said, I got to go home and read some more. It's really interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, this has been going on. And then Terry, we started to help him. He needed help, all right? I won't tell you all the things that happened, but we started, you know, he was going to the Mayo Clinic, and they were giving him
radiation treatment.
Radiation therapy, and they weren't giving him much time to live.
They
now,
gave
you know,
him 1 year.
They were doing that with Terry as well. And I said, I'm not going to let her die. And I became a semi-expert on various things for cancer. And I started her on it. And then I started Paul on these things. And, of course, he would get all excited about something. And then 2 weeks later, he'd say, on to the next thing. In other words, he couldn't keep his focus. He was being doubting Thomas, in other words. I kept watching it. And
yeah, he'd be one way one day, and then the next day, no, maybe not, maybe not.
And then eventually, he had a manufactured home in Sedona that he wasn't using, and then he was going to rent it. And I found someone to rent it for him, okay, who wanted it. And they went to move in, and they drove from California to Sedona to move in. And it just so happens it was Daphne, of all people, And when they got to the door, there was a notice that he was being evicted from this manufactured home park in Sedona, because they asked him to sign a new lease since it was in his wife's name, and he didn't see it or he didn't do it, and he just put it to the side and made pretend it wasn't there, and so they took it from him. It was no longer his. And so I got involved, and I helped get it back. I just was diplomatic with the manager of the park, and I said, you can't let this happen. This guy is old. He doesn't remember things. It was a mistake. So we got it back. But I spent a couple of weeks doing this, which I really didn't have time to do. And after which, he drove his old car over and said, "Here, Wynn, I want you to have my car, right?" And here's a funny story. Paul and his daughter, who lives in Massachusetts, I told Paul, "You got to see Kimberly." And I arranged, Kimberly was doing an event in San Francisco, and we all flew to San Francisco, and Paul paid the bill. And he and his daughter went in, had two appointments with Kimberly, and later Kimberly tells me, "You know, that guy Paul is weird. He kept saying, I should marry you, me. Kimberly should marry me." And so he could marry Terrence.
Kimberly should marry Wynn, so Paul can marry Terry.
He took this whole appointment up with Kimberly, trying to convince her that she should be my partner, and that he would marry Terry. And
he says, "I want to take care of her. I want to make sure she has everything. I want to provide her a good life. She can write her book." And, he didn't go in and say, "I'm here for a session to try and get cured of cancer," or anything like that. He went in and he said, "There's this girl that I'm in love with, and they really want to marry her and provide her with a good life, and and it's Terry." And Kimberly was, "What?"
at first, I went nuts over this, because I said to myself, Kimberly is thinking, "What is Wynn into? Who are these people that he brings here, right?" and we all went back to Sedona, and I was thinking of telling Terry, "You can't go to breakfast with Paul anymore," but I didn't do it. I realized it was keeping him alive. It was the one thing he looked forward to every day. And eventually, Paul decided that, "I can see that you and Terry, have an important connection, and I'm just not going to put that energy out." And continued. And then, I'm telling you this story. I know it's probably entertaining, but the real thing about it is, because somebody was a disciple of Jesus's, and I'm sure he was, they were in no way perfect. They had their idiosyncrasies, their distortions, and he was still working through it, okay? And I think that really surprised me at first. But after a while, I realized that they were just ordinary people that made a commitment to help this guy who was walking around ministering to people. And Jesus would pick them and say, "You come with me. You come with me." And they would go. But it wasn't like it was a bed of roses. And it wasn't like they were feeling the Holy Spirit. And they knew. I know what that felt like with this teacher that I had. And at the time, I was ready. I had the feeling, I'm going to give up everything and follow this guy. And you know what? He told me not to do that. He said, I had my own work to do. And he was right. He didn't want followers. He didn't want me as a follower anyway. And all of you have your work to do. Even though we have the Christ consciousness on these calls, each of you is on your own path. Each of you is creating yourself. And we are bringing in grace, and I think that's all to say. We got to go. Anything you want to say, Terry? We're 1 minute away from 7. We're going to Whole Planet Healing, 712-770-4340, 712-770-4340. PIN is 250-513, 250-513. Terry, 7 o'clock.
Yeah, one last thing. Paul, just last week, she passed away last Sunday, and he was, he's a free spirit, and I can feel him on the other side, and he made his way to heaven, and he was commenting about how beautiful the gardens are there.
Mm-hmm. And remember, heaven is a halfway stop for a lot of people. For some people, they stay there to be of service. It's a place where souls come to be rehabilitated after their last round on Earth. But they have to qualify to go there. They have to have an open heart. They have to have some potential. But they're not perfect. None of us are perfect. And that's the deal. Accept yourself as you are and realize it's fine to be imperfect. And the more you accept that, the easier and faster you evolve. And on that note, I'm going to unmute everybody.
All participants are muted. All participants are unmuted.
Okay. We're unmuted.
Thank you.
I hope
thank
you enjoyed
beautiful
that story. Huh?
Thank you. Thank you, Wynn.